Two Dope Boys and a Podcast. I'm Michael Brooks.
I'm Phil McKenzie.
Two Dope Boys is a shout out from the margins. Each week we break down trends using the lens of culture to shed light on what's significant to your future and why. How you doing, my comrade?
I'm doing good, man. Ready to rock.
Yeah. It's a very lit studio this evening. There's a lot going on in the environment.
Always.
As always. Every time you have a Georgette pre-air and she can't even wait for her fucking introduction.
I couldn't.
You know it's a lit situation.
It is.
Real quick, Georgette, we're about to get to the brand F up. Say what's up for 1 second.
Hi, Georgette Pierre on the ones and twos.
Core crew has returned.
Thank you.
Shauna Watt is with us, Two Dope Boys Associate, Super Producer Matt Leck. It's all here. It's all happening. We got to get to the brand F up and some new sound effects. They're going to join the brand F up. I'm very excited about this.
Oh, my God.
But Miss Georgette.
Yeah.
Miss Georgette. Pierre.
Pierre. Here you go again with that shit.
The Empress of Dating.
Stop.
Would you sneeze? I hope there's a YouTube video, Instagram video of you with that fucking face. All right. Tell us.
Yep.
Introduce us to the brand F up this week. You know, Super Producer Matt had such a brilliant point. The brand F up is the past. It's the F up of the past week.
Mm-hmm.
What's up is our present, and what's next is our future. So bring us into our near pathetic past and get us to the brand F up of the week.
So this article comes from Jezebel. Shout out to Jezebel.
Love to Jezebel.
Yeah, so there's a new Weight Watchers campaign that suggests fat women don't enjoy sex as much as thin women. It's actually rolled out. They call it the Weight Watchers Black campaign, and it rolled out in Australia with a gift to reporters. It was a mood light bulb. They call it the mood light light bulb. That you would screw in before you screw, but no one really does shit like that. So
wait, they actually said screw in before you screw.
That's
the brand F up right there. That is the most hackneyed.
The wording.
Copy.
I think the controversy behind that, it was more so the copy that came with the light bulb when a lot of these, you know, people received it. It said, let's be honest for a minute. Sex is pretty damn fantastic. But if you've ever felt self-conscious in the sack, you're not alone. We've heard that more than half of women have avoided sex because they were worried about how they look.
In the sack?
Uh-huh. This globe is a mood light designed to give you a little boost in the bedroom. A PG sex toy, if you will. We hope it helps you start seeing yourself in a new light to love. Love how you look and love how you feel. Someone had mentioned or made the comment that the insecurities actually even come from some of the ad copy that Weight Watchers uses to get their subscribers to begin with. And so a lot of the insecurities are perpetuated by how they're even trying to market women.
So there was a major backlash on social.
Mm-hmm.
You have some examples of that backlash, and then the company released the statement.
Do
our review.
So this comes from Brittany Jabor. It was on Twitter. She said, "How many people thought this was an okay idea before it arrived on my desk as a piece of PR?"
Yeah.
So the statement, Mashable received a statement from the director of programming content. Her name is Martha Lurie Bird. She said, "The campaign is about falling in love with real food again, enjoying getting active, and discovering how good they can feel."
All right, Mr.
They
Phil.
Also, wait, yeah, before ahead. Phil goes, they also attempted to clarify the ads. They said it was based off of research from Maidstone Consulting that indicated about a quarter of Australian women avoid sexual activity because they're self-conscious about their bodies.
Hello, mate.
Hello. So, I mean, I watched the ad. And so, I mean, again, the ad was fine, but I think it was more so the verbiage that was a little bit offensive to some women. But do you all even think it was offensive? Fellas?
Yeah, I actually didn't find anything overly wrong.
Of course you didn't.
With
I'm just
the
kidding.
Ad, you know.
But I think sexist
like
pig.
But I think like that's the reaction. Like right. A lot of people will feel that like automatically, you know, you're a guy, you're kind of going in a particular direction, but the fact that they based some of this off of research, and I think there's a little bit of reality that, you know, many people feel somewhat insecure in intimate/sexual encounters. You know, it's the reason why, like, if you watch porn, like, black dudes always have on socks.
You know? Is that a thing? I don't get into porn, by the way.
What the fuck?
Is that a real thing?
I am okay, definitely getting
their feet
educated.
Are ugly, right? Their feet are ugly?
It's a, like, it's a, they could be ashy.
Oh.
You know?
Oh,
like,
okay.
That's a thing?
Definitely, all right, there's people in the heartland getting
that's,
educated.
That's a thing?
This is going to be
let's
a new
go,
drop
keep going.
For,
all right.
For Two Dope
Boys. That's definitely
know?
A new drop for Two Dope Boys. That's why black dudes wear socks and porn.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a drop for everything.
That's
now.
Actually fucking hilarious. All right.
This is the beauty of cultural insight.
I love
man.
It. I love it.
And you don't know where they come
that's
from.
That's our mission. That's
this
our mission.
This is our mission to
that
point out things.
Can I just say, I love how raw Phil can get. Because it's so random at times. I was like, the fuck?
No. Phil's like, you know, I think it's a really complicated situation because it reminded me, actually, I remember I was watching this double penetration stream once.
And they had on socks. Brothers with rocking socks.
Socks, you know, I love it.
What happened was I noticed that she was wearing an Indian
symbol,
but it was not really accurate to the part of India that she was from.
Well, no,
so
I'm
it
curious.
Ruined the whole double penetration well, no, scene for me.
Please do tell. Continue, Phil.
But, you know, the larger point beyond the socks.
The larger point. I don't think there is a larger point.
This is over.
After the socks. I think that's the point.
But the reality is that I think we're being disingenuous if we're going to say that people, not just men, not just women, not just men or men have issues around intimate moments. And to
speak for yourself,
you know, to pretend
shut
that that's
the
not
fuck
the case,
up, Michael,
we gotta allow for that to exist. And I think Weight Watchers has been consistent in their brand. I don't read this as misogyny. This couple with the ad itself, which I did watch, showed that they're, you know,
and there'll
they
be a link to our web, to yeah, the ad in our
they
show.
They showed women
so
of,
can make their own opinion and tweet it at us.
Yeah, they're not classical ages, is, you know,
right,
they're
right.
Different, you know, they're different types of women. I think that's a real attempt to show that this is a conversation that cuts across and beyond the usual stereotypes.
Listen, no.
Here's my issue. I think that the problem that happens in these things, just really quick, is that two things get equated that shouldn't be equated. I think on just a brand level, I don't think that this is barely even an indirect faux pas. I don't think that they were attempting to shame anybody.
Yeah.
I don't think they were attempting to reinforce any toxicity. I don't And we make this distinction a lot where we talk about intentions. And I would go so far as to say, like, I don't even know if this is a case where the intentions weren't there and it was even an innately bad thing to do. The problem is that there is a larger social context of, like, you know, extreme body shaming, obviously. And we're in an environment now where people take opportunities to illustrate larger truths, even if, like, the micro example isn't necessarily on point. So my sort of takeaway from that would be, like, regardless of anybody's particular feelings about this particular case study, you need to anticipate things like this. So if you had the right type of cultural insight or anthropological strategy on staff at Weight Watchers, you absolutely would say, okay, the research tells us this. I don't know if reinforcing it with a light bulb is a good call.
You're saying anticipate the backlash or the...
Because you gotta see the whole ocean you're swimming in.
Right.
So the specific example and what they did, I think it's a really big stretch to come down hard on. But that's only if you're staying in a very tight lane and not seeing the whole world you're in. The whole world you're in of extreme body shaming and everything else is going to feed that narrative. And we're in a time right now where people are popping off.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the context. That's the environment.
Yeah.
So you're going to encounter it, right or wrong. And in some ways, right or wrong is besides the point, because all of these examples are going to be used to illustrate the larger truth, even if it's wrong in the particular case study. You see what I mean?
If I were Weight Watchers, I would just double down on it. You know, like, I think the thing is, part of what we talk about, like, being brave, you know, like,
yeah,
if you, because one can extrapolate that, oh, Weight Watchers' entire business model is body shaming. You can go that far with it. They're like, oh, everybody should be happy exactly the way they are.
Right,
and why are
right.
we even encouraging people yeah. to go to weight Whereas loss programs?
Me, like, I'm always encouraging black people to make their feet not disgusting.
Listen, and I want to say, to Phil's point, and I am fucking offended if you're wearing socks while we're having sex. You need to take that shit off, okay? I don't give a
you
shit.
Must not have sex with many black men then.
Oh my gosh.
Revelation.
You're trying to play me. No, listen, I mean, I think the thing is, it's not that, I don't necessarily think I was that offended by. Well, let me say this. I wonder if there would have been more commentary if this was rolled out in the U.S. This was just Australia. So there was more so of like a micro audience, to kind of test this out with, but would it have been more backlash? And then I do agree to your point, Phil, about if it's Weight Watchers being, I don't know how a light bulb ties into being comfy with who you are. I
hear what you're saying. I think you're actually both making really valid points, and I think that that's true. Like that's like one of the most fundamental disjunctures for Weight Watchers as an example as a brand. That's something that any brand that is dealing with body image is going to need to deal with right now in this current environment. What is the balance? Because, you know, for a long time, we were on that extreme other end, which is that we're going to shame you for your body. We're going to attack you. We're going to shame you. We're going to humiliate you. And then we're going to give you a key to not to conform, right? And that's very shaming and it's very cruel and it's caused a lot of damage. I agree, though, you know, Phil, especially if your brand proposition is Weight Watchers, you can't, you know, no, you're not going to go in the other extreme direction. You're going to have to figure out this, a way of saying, like, we embrace you and take you for who and as you are, but there's a goal here and you want to do something with your health and want to do something with your appearance that's aspirational. And you're going to need to fuse that message and double down on that message at the same time. And it's a serious challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. I just don't necessarily know if a light bulb assists in that message.
I don't know if we figured anything out on this. We want to hear your thoughts. Tweet us, hit us up on Instagram. Let us know what you think. We got to get to what's up.
Now we want to get to what's up. And
what's up?
What's up? We want to talk about paranoia in our current industries. And we're going to focus.
What?
Yeah.
Why are you talking about me?
Paranoia. This is everywhere, particularly in industries. Travel industries, and we're going to focus on the airlines because they've been the most notable and egregious abusers of this current state of paranoia that people have when they travel. And it's part of this sort of, if you see something, say something credo that you see in many cities here in New York that's very popular.
The amount of reports that super producer Matt has made about terrorist attacks just even at the Metro Tech stop alone is just awe-inspiring.
It's astronomical.
He's like, if you see something, say something. It's incredible. And apparently he sees a lot.
And it does work into people's need to like be tattletales. So anyway, you know, most recently, United Airlines kicked a passenger off the plane, a female passenger, because she was wearing a Marvel superhero hat, that superhero in question being Black Panther, and additionally had on a t-shirt with a upside down American flag. And this was just happened last week, but this is the most recent case. But there's tons of them. You know, the sad thing is that if you do any Google search about, you know, Muslims being ejected off of planes or African Americans being ejected off planes, there'll be a litany of links that you can come to. Two Muslim women were kicked off an American airline flight in Miami. A Ivy League economist that was doing math was kicked off of another American Airlines flight due to a customer's discomfort. And, you know, it's very easy for people to feel uncomfortable around those that, for whatever reason, they feel are a threat to them. But how much of this paranoia are airlines feeding into in a, you know, overzealous attempt to make people feel safe? What are we trying to make people safe from? You know, and at the end of the day, this impacts those people of color, whether they're Muslims or not, that are trying to get from point A to point B. Flying is uncomfortable enough as it is. And now you're adding an extra layer of paranoia to this. And how much of this is just status quo in this new America?
I think, you know, for me, I think it's a little reckless. I'm going to fuck Michael up in this studio. We are doing the most. I think it's a little reckless that
a lot of... super inappropriate. Matt, could you get her out of here?
I think the airlines are being too reactionary. They're not being proactive, right? So for some of the stories that you mentioned, so for starting with the woman with the Black Panther hat, that was in relation to Marvel and not necessarily the activist group. I think they're being...
Even if it was.
Even if it was. But no, absolutely, I agree. Yeah, yeah. Even if it was. But they were also referencing that she had... A$AP Rocky had a shirt where the American flag was upside down. Right,
yeah. A$AP Rocky, very political.
Yeah. But I think it's very reactionary. I think it's... you know, I don't, when you start talking about there being issues with what passengers are wearing, and that's enough, that's grounds for you to kick them off. I'm not going to say there's a lawsuit on your hands, but I just think there's other ways of resolving some of this. But I don't like the idea, Phil, of them being very reactionary. The second story that you mentioned that I remember reading about was the black doctors and what black doctors look like. It was a trending hashtag on Twitter. And there was somebody that was there was something going on with them, and it was an emergency situation. And of course, the flight attendants had called for any doctors on the plane. And this woman of color said she was a doctor. The flight attendant questioned her, did not even allow her to assist the passenger on the plane that needed help. There was a white guy that was on there, and I guess he showed whatever
information. I'll take care of it.
Right. She said she had her information. At the end of the day, I think it's very reactionary. I think a lot of these airlines don't want to speak for sometimes the discrimination or even their own prejudices of their employees, you know, when these things happen. And so you have to own that. You have to own that and take responsibility for that. Don't act like, you know, they did what they were supposed to do. And the real reason why this, you know, going back to the woman that had the Black Panther hat on, the real reason why she got kicked off the plane was because it was an altercation and that she had a conversation about something else. No, let's own this.
I think that what's really important about this as well, and that fits into the kind of larger thesis of the segment and this show that you guys have already pointed to, but, you know, again, the cultural prime directive and the sort of anthropological almost just basis of the reality that in any business you're in today, you're in the culture business and you're in the media business in two senses that are really clear. One, you're in the culture business because you, especially if you're in the airline or in travel, in any type of business that deals in any way nationally or globally, you're quite literally in the business of dealing with different cultures, different races, different backgrounds, different experiences, different cultural signifiers as just the sort of basic setting point of your clients and who you serve. And number two, everybody's a media business because, you know, if this has happened in the early 90s or the 80s or something, maybe if you were lucky, it would have been picked up by like a reporter somewhere at some newspaper and they would have said, you know, this is egregious and disgusting. Now we're in the social media age. This is going to immediately set off a chain reaction and it's going to get picked up. We're going to talk about it. Plenty of other places are going to talk about it. So there are basic literacies that companies and their employees are not instilling. And it's ingrained again and again and again. Another, you know, case that you alluded to, Phil, was the gentleman, you know, the Muslim gentleman who had said, inshallah, before the flight went off. Now, that's basically God willing. I mean, that's essentially like, you know, the closest I could, it's basically please God. I mean, it's sort of like I was flying to LA recently and the gentleman in front of me was obviously not so into flying and he, you know, he did some Hail Marys and crossed himself before he flew. That's essentially, except, you know, probably less upset to say inshallah, but it's like, please God, don't let this plane crash.
Right.
That was a problem. He got removed from the plane. All of these cases are bigoted, they're disgusting, we should critique them, but they also point to a very core incompatibility with these business operating systems, with operating in 21st century capitalism. And that's, you need the basic cultural intelligence to be able to function in these environments. You need the basic cultural intelligence because every brand is a media brand now, even if you don't know it. And as soon as you're a media brand, you're in a media environment and you're going to be held to media standards.
And you need people who understand those who are actually using these services. So there's an article from thehill.com, and this is a little dated in the fact that it's 2014, but the numbers have not changed in any way, probably statistically, where it's important that, and these are general sort of what they call flight deck diversity numbers. Flight deck are not just the pilot, but it's the stewards. It's everyone who works kind of on your plane. Mm-hmm. And they said today 4.1% of airline transport pilots are women. 2.7% are Black or African American. 2.5% are Asian, and 5% are Hispanic or Latino. It goes on to say, when talking about the current levels from a demographic perspective of diversity, that an analysis of segregation in U.S. industry hiring practices using data from the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, or the EEOC, for the years 1966 to 2003 that accounted for race, ethnicity, and sex shows that workplace desegregation stalled at 1980 levels. Right. So basically in 2016, we have airlines across the board operating at 1980 levels in terms of their personnel. So there's no one on these flights that are able to translate those cultural cues.
Everybody in this room was born.
Yeah.
I mean,
You don't know that.
Well, not me, but I generally know what you're saying.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't. No, I mean,
but it's at least before.
Georgette is old as fuck. I wasn't trying to throw you out like that.
But it's at least before Reagan gutted the airline controllers.
It was before you, exactly. Right. Yeah. And that's a really important point. And I think that is, again, this other overlap where these kind of stats that get used to make a very righteous and very correct case about just the sort of innate morality of diversity, which is an innate value in and of itself, but it also overlaps with these incredibly, you know, sort of bottom line business demands of this environment and the cultural intelligence you need to even just know. Like, and again, I don't think it should make zero difference what somebody's wearing a Black Panther hat, even if it represented the politics and they're going to try to, you know, hijack the plane. I mean, I don't know how fucking stupid you have to be to actually think that, but it might not be a bad idea to actually have a staff where at least one person could say, oh, that was a 70s comic. And it's getting rebooted with one of America's most prominent writers right now. Yeah. It's not really that esoteric.
Well, yeah, but I think that the funny thing is also she said the person that was wearing the black
hat. That's Ta-Nehisi Coates, by the way. I just want to say for everybody that we spread a little cultural intelligence here.
You opened the door, man.
Mad respect to Howard. Mad respect to Howard. Georgette, go.
Okay. Yeah. Well, no, the point that she also made was he, you know, because the pilot, she was like, how offended was he? Because he also walked past me to go to the bathroom and didn't even give me a smug look. So a lot of times I wonder if you know, if these flight attendants are just kind of using excuses to justify their own kind of prejudices against certain things, right?
Of course.
So it's easy to say, like, the pilot is uncomfortable, but it's yes, I say uncomfortable. Because I'm from the islands. Yeah, I'm from the islands, Trinidad and Tobago. But the pilot, she said, why should the pilot be concerned about what I'm wearing? He's in the cockpit. Like, why is this a thing? And so that's, again, a lot of times I think these flight attendants can use the weight of other things to justify their prejudices and their judgments and I'm not here for that. And so from my understanding, they didn't apologize to her. Right.
No, they haven't apologized.
As of this recording, they haven't apologized. Right. I think a lot of it was the back and forth on DMs with her. But they felt like
they reached out to her on Twitter to say and please DM us. But no one said unequivocally.
I don't think they're going to apologize.
Entirely unacceptable.
To them it's not an apology. I think there needs to be a lot more. I mean, I think we've talked about this in previous episodes, but just more cultural sensitivity training, right? And
I would make the distinction of cultural sensitivity to cultural intelligence.
Yeah.
And realizing that everybody in today's world is in a media brand.
Yep.
And everybody in today's world is in a culture and anthropology brand. I mean, that's the point that we always make.
Yeah.
And you need to not just have sensitivity, but you need to have some grounding in other people's experience.
Right.
So as to not embarrass yourself. Bong. It's not even just, you know, that's the thing is we make this all so elevated, but not all of it is elevated. Some of it is just like, this is fucking moronic.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing to even
basic
read about this.
Blocking and tackling.
It is basic blocking and tackling. I would say even to the point of that if even in the privacy of your own home and thoughts, you want to be racist or anti-Semitic or whatever. This is just embarrassing.
Well,
it's fucking stupid.
Well, I think it's I agree that it's fucking stupid because there's one too many stories coming out for airline after airline after airline after airline. And it's like, come on, people. Like, what are y'all doing?
Right.
What are y'all doing? Well, let me make the point. Virgin America is actually still good. They're in the clear. I love Virgin America, by the way.
Oh, Virgin America, give us a call.
Yeah, Virgin America.
We would love
if you
to
would
fly.
Like to somehow monetize Georgette's craven
please,
worship.
Please, I love
of you.
Fucking Virgin America. Fucking love Virgin
That's
America.
That's what she said. All right, now we got to get to what's next. All right, so now we got to get to what's next when Georgette's done eating. And for what's next, we're talking about Netflix, new cutting-edge, bold, innovative strategy for China. And that strategy is get the hell out of China. That's right, Netflix, the popular streaming and now really original content service is pivoting out of the Chinese market. And I'm going to read some quotes now from Quartz where I get where we're basing this story off of and then kind of get to some of the sort of implications for the global economy and streaming services that we can pull out of this. So basically Netflix had sort of really attempted over the past couple of years to enter into the Chinese market. Obviously, China is an enormous, booming, and emerging market with a lot of customers, a lot of tech access, and a sort of natural place to go. In 2015, the company was in talks with Wasu Media, which is a Chinese holding company backed by Alibaba's Jack Ma. And that was sort of their entrance to access China's literally hundreds of millions of internet users. But they found the regulatory, and now I'm going to quote from this Quartz article. The regulatory environment for foreign digital content services in China has become challenging. We now plan to license content to existing, this is Netflix statement about, with regards to China. Now, license content to existing online service providers in China rather than operate our own service in China in the near term. We expect revenue from this licensing to be modest. We still have a long-term desire to serve the Chinese people directly and hope to launch our service in China eventually. So they're going to work with subcontractors. And I'll just sort of go on to break down a couple of other aspects of the story. And this is again from Quartz. Licensing content to existing online service providers means that Netflix could sell China's domestic video streaming sites the rights to broadcast series that that Netflix owns. For example, Netflix could charge IQIYE, the video streaming site affiliated with search giant Baidu, the rights to the show Stranger Things to a Chinese audience. Local companies could likely shoulder the burdens of complying with the rules set by China's capricious media censors. So what we have here basically is sort of a fusion of things. I mean, China, again, there's still very tight censorship on content. So that's a challenge for Netflix overall streaming services. So just even as an example, you know, if Netflix has some documentaries on the Dalai Lama, you know, even just like his spiritual teachings, that would obviously be a problem from a Chinese censorship point of view. There's also a competitive domestic and internal Chinese market as well, in addition to the censors. And I think one of the really interesting things about this is that China as a market, in good ways and very bad ways, is sort of overturning the mythology of the sort of American-led global capital and global culture, because China has enough weight to throw around, and again, in both good and bad ways, to sort of establish its own parameters for how it wants to do capitalism. And this is another example where we can see that
we're not necessarily entering into one global market. We're actually entering into many versions of a global market. And China is proving that you can essentially have an authoritarian, state-managed capitalism. And it will scare off everyone from, you know, deep human rights reformers to Netflix. What do you guys think?
I think this is smart on Netflix's move.
You know, yeah, it's a smart move. I agree from a Netflix perspective. Yeah.
Generally, they're doing what businesses should do, is taking a look at both not only the business climate of the market they want to enter, but also some cultural components of the market they're trying to enter, and understanding that this might not be the right time. You know, we talk a lot about a long-term strategy, you know, instead of, you know, making moves that are sort of quarter by quarter. You know, China has a big market. We feel we need to be there. Let's just insert
China
ourselves.
As trendy space.
Yeah,
which China is how it's mostly reported here.
Yeah, it's just a thing. Right. Like, it's this unknown huge market that represents opportunity to some and complete like fear and discomfort to others.
Right.
And it's very easy to say, you know, this is the door we want to go down. Or the hole we want to go down, rather. And I think it's smart on behalf of Netflix to say, you know what, this might not be the right time. The environment can change. There's a competitive market that we are not really equipped to compete in. And it's better for us to take a step back than to risk more problems down the line.
Right.
You know, so from that perspective, I think this is where it makes sense for them to be.
I think it's part of me, one, was curious about just China kind of blocking a lot of Western influences to begin with. Mm-hmm. They had mentioned in this article that, you know, Apple tried to do something with their iTunes movie, and there was some other company, like major companies, like Disney tried to do their streaming video. A lot of these things were shut down. So I guess the question that was posed in my mind was, is China even worth pursuing at this point, right? So I get that it's very competitive.
In terms of market share, of course. I mean, it's China. It's the second largest economy in the world.
I get that, but they are very adamant about keeping certain types of content out. And
absolutely.
So, because the article mentioned also that they blocked or banned anything that was from homosexuality to witchcraft. And so, you know, we're a little bit more liberal.
That would eliminate all your content. Come on, that was good though.
I couldn't even think of anything to say to you besides beyond like, so shut good. The fuck up. Like, that's the only thing I can think of when it comes to when Michael starts talking shit.
Because I'm so good at it.
No, you think you're good at it.
Hey, you think you're good at it. Left you speechless. Fuck out of here. Just accept the loss and keep going. It's okay.
But no, that's the one thing I think about. You know, when you're talking about these big giants that have money to spend in a country like China, they're getting shut down. Disney, Apple, you know, Netflix has to compete against other companies. And so, yes, it's a large market share, but there's a lot of headache that goes into it. Like, are there laws or restrictions for the type of content they can stream? I mean, at this point, Netflix can only really license their content.
Right.
They can't license anything else that they're paying for, obviously. But I don't know. Part of me didn't know if China was worth the fight.
Yeah. Plus, you got to think, like, these are countries and media markets that have their own.
Right.
They have their own things going on.
Like, their own sensibilities, like, and their own native product.
Yeah, exactly. No,
And that's the sort of the main point, I think, that again, and I don't make any value judgment on this because I think it's very important to not, you know, China, you know, these restrictions on what content is available is reflective of, you know, serious human rights violations and stifling of debate in China and all the rest. So that's a real issue. But the reality is that the mythology that came out of the 1990s in particular, and still a lot of people hold on to, that there's this sort of inevitable march to some type of global marketplace, which is going to essentially be made in an American image, is a mythology.
Yeah.
And it's a mythology, again, in ways that are, you know, positive, because frankly, I think we want a much more diverse, sophisticated, and genuinely global world. And, you know, in some ways, you know, negative, because it means that there isn't you know, there's definitely not this inevitability of progress on things like certain areas of human rights. It just isn't there. And people, again, from a brand perspective, you need to start looking at books like What Does China Think? You need to start looking at a place like China in terms of not just its censorship, but what are the debates inside China? What are the different political factions within inside China? What are, you know, as you're both saying, what is the kind of content that is emerging organically out of a Chinese market? That's another thing that all of these brands that do streaming services are going to have to contend with. I mean, we all know about Bollywood and how important Bollywood is to people. Nollywood is going to be increasingly important to people. People want to participate in a global culture, but in a way that sort of is filtered through their particular locality. And that can mean everything from, you know, a censorship bureau of a very powerful government to someone on the ground using a phone to make a documentary. And if Netflix wants to participate effectively in that global system, they're going to need to anticipate the needs of that globalized environment and really have, again, anthropologists, trend watchers, people on the ground who understand the cultural prime directive to be in that conversation. And until that happens, you know, it's going to be hard to penetrate China or anywhere else.
That's what he said.
Georgette comes back. She comes back.
That coming.
The she minute comes back word, hard.
He said penetrate.
I didn't penetrate you.
It was for you.
I was like, here we go.
I was like, let me throw Georgette a penetrate. All right, that's what's next. We got to get to the crates.
The crates.
All right, we got to get to the crates. This is where we have a culture pick. It could be anything. It could be a sporting event, piece of music, book, song, piece of art, comedy, whatever.
This
something
is one
that
of
makes
my favorite
you
parts.
Stronger, better, faster. It's one of Miss Georgette's favorite parts, but we're going to start with Phil. Phil, what you got this week, my friend?
I got one of my favorite rap albums.
Ooh.
From a Queens group, so I'm going to shout out to Queens, even though they are second class to Brooklyn. But generally speaking, it's the truth. Brooklyn,
you know what, Phil,
Brooklyn.
I gotta say,
the planet.
I just gotta say real
he
quick.
He said second class to Brooklyn.
We just gotta get on a Phil and Michael tip for one moment. I remember when you told me at one point, and it was not through any like direction in the conversation, it just was like a kind of offhand mention, that I was the opposite of New Brooklyn. I appreciated that.
Yeah, man.
And we had a lot of work to do. You were like, you're Brooklyn. You're not this.
Yeah, we gotta represent real Brooklyn,
yes.
Man. Real
and I do appreciate
real grimy
that.
Brooklyn.
I do appreciate grimy Brooklyn. Oh, whatever it means.
Because it's gentrified Brooklyn now.
Yeah, now it's sucker.
Even if
Brooklyn.
It was like Park
Slope. Sucker ass Brooklyn.
Hey, look, as long as it's not organic mayo Brooklyn, that's cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is one of my favorite groups, Organized Confusion, Prince Po, Pharoah Monch. Pharoah Monch is one of the best MCs to ever do it. And their second album, Stress, The Extinction Agenda, is just fire from beginning to end. It's a great album. It's like Prince Po is great, but Pharoah Monch, like I said, is just a seminal MC.
Yeah.
He went on to have and continues to have, actually, I shouldn't say had a, like he's not still dropping lyrics, but you know, he has a great solo career. But you know, Extinction Agenda is just like is a real solid moment in hip-hop, but particularly like New York hip-hop, that sort of mid-90s. It has a particular sound and aesthetic and even look to the videos that they shot. And if you listen to a track like Stress, which is the title track from the record, it's gonna have a particular sound. But even the song they have is the next to last song, called Straight Bullet, which uses a beat that Black Moon also rocked on one of their tracks. But like this idea, like they were one of the first rappers to do this sort of from the perspective of an inanimate object type of track, and the track is called Straight Bullet, and it's just great balls of fire.
I'm traveling at higher speeds to proceed to penetrate flesh, hitting the spleen after splitting the chest of a queen's teen. Age of pages shredded to pieces from the Glock 9 and its hollow tips. It releases the police in the back of the ambulance. Blood lost as I shift across your chest.
It's crazy sick.
So there's like a precursor to like I Gave You Power.
Yeah, it's okay.
It's a Nas track, yeah, from the perspective
literally,
of a
like
gun.
I didn't want to make it sound like I was gonna say something negative about Nas.
No,
Nas
is negative.
Nas did that second.
Don't talk about Nas, okay? Nas is fine. Okay, I just want
to leave
not
that
the
on
main point with Nas.
I just no, I just this Nas. I don't understand. I just it's Nas.
Okay, sounds good. Nasir, Georgette is available.
Yep.
Oh my god!
All right, now we're gonna get get to my pick because Georgette needs to be last. So, look, I'm gonna just take another week to get on my neo roots rock evangelical tip, because I do really love what's happening right now in Jamaican music. And as I've said before, we're going to layer this in, the song I'm picking, just like we did with Jesse Royal a couple weeks ago. I love dancehall. I love Vibes Cartel. I love Goli. I love Gaza. I love all of that. I like the violence promotion. No, you should cut that part. I'm just playing. No, I like all of the dancehall griminess and everything else. But I think the neo roots rock thing is fascinating right now. And this week I want to pick the prime dude in that vehicle, and that is Chronix. This is a track from 2014. It's called Eternal Fire. And as you're listening to this, I think you can hear sort of the energy that you can hear from Bob Marley through Garnet Silk and through Now. This is a topic we'll definitely cover. I think it's fascinating that this is kind of surging again in Jamaica. I think it really does overlap with a different political appetite, a different social appetite. There's no, you know, necessarily contradiction between what's happening in dancehall and what's happening in neo roots rock, although there is some real beef, as an example, between Chronix and Vibes Cartel, and it's an interesting kind of split in the reggae culture of Jamaica. But I think that this music, through people like Chronix, and you're hearing in the song, they've found a way to update this music so that they're not just sort of simply kind of replicating and duplicating and copying, like, you know, the greats from the Bob Marley era. They're taking this same kind of message and actual political radicalism of Rasta politics and all the rest, and very sort of specific Jamaican cultural slant. And it is very much of this time and of our age. And it's incredibly impressive music. I love it. I hope everybody will get on it as well. So that's Eternal Fire by Chronix. The very tipsy, the very talented, the very core crew who I've known for years, Miss Georgette Pierre with her crate.
You're such an ass for calling me very tipsy, although I spilled
true.
It on myself.
I mean, look, it's true.
I did. I spilled it on myself.
Right,
okay, anyway.
This is Obama describing Georgette right now.
Okay.
She's a very talented, young cultural commentator. She's also drunk as fuck. She comes to Dope Boys, and she can't handle a little Prosecco. It's kind of amazing.
Listen, y'all, I've been sipping all night, and I definitely spilled it on my jeans. Anywho.
But not anywhere else in the studio.
Right, exactly.
Proprietors of the studio. Okay.
My digging in the crates has to be, and you know what, and shout out to him because he retweeted me because I was finally listening to his album. But my digging in the crates is Jesse Boykins III. And it's called Earth Girls. And I'm very late to Jesse Boykins III, but because I was listening to Love Apparatus the other night to help me go to sleep, because I definitely listened to a different playlist, Nature Noise. And I retweeted that I was finally listening to, I mean, I tweeted that I was listening to it. He retweeted me. But I must say that I fucking love Earth Girls. There's just a different vibe. They say women are from Venus. I'm over you. I love my Earth Girls. I love. No, it's such a beautiful song. I think you like it. So shout out to Jesse Boykins. I appreciate you retweeting me, but I have to say that I really love your song, Earth Girls. And that's my digging in the crates. I'm keeping it really simple this time.
Very, very simple. Matt, can you handle that? Can you throw the sister a link for once?
Shut the hell up.
God's sake.
He's been doing really well on that.
I love Matt. don't look at me with those glazed drunken eyes. All right. I want to thank Core Crew, Georgia Pierre.
Thank you. I love you, Georgia. You know I love being here with y'all.
I can't wait for you to come back.
Oh, yes.
All right.
Oh, can I mention one more thing?
No.
For my Digging in the Crates.
No, you know what else? Now that you mentioned, you should also talk about your new podcast.
I actually, oh my gosh, you took the words out of my mouth, Michael.
I got you.
Yes, I have a new podcast on SoundCloud. I'm co-hosting and producing. It's called Venting and Vino. Episode 1 is up right now. It's
Phil's in it.
He's not in it yet, but I will bring that ass. I will definitely bring that ass. No, it's two of my other coworkers, and we literally sit and chat and vent about different things over vino. Although the irony is we didn't have any alcohol the first episode, which is kind of funny. But Venting in Vino on SoundCloud, and it will be on iTunes really soon. So please check me out, follow, and we'll love your feedback.
We have all the links to everything that you need to follow the great Georgette Pierre, brother Philip McKenzie. Venus. Thank you so much, man. Always,
thanks, man. It's
always
good.
Another
journey.
You guys.
Keep growing, build. Sean Awad, he's a Two Dope Boys associate. He's with us. You're going to hear him on mic very soon. He's coming. Super producer Matt Leck. Follow us on Two Dope Boys at Two Dope Boys Pod on Twitter. Two Dope Boys Pod on Instagram.
Stay flexing.
Reach out to us in any way you can. We want to hear your feedback. We want to hear your thoughts. Reach out to Phil and I on our work, speaking, consulting, and everything else. You can find us on Twitter. All of the links and everything else are in the show notes. We will see you on Thursday for On Point.